All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings, Season 2, Episode 3. And today I wanted to get into climate change. Now, of course, this is a very broad topic, and there's no way that I could cover it all in one singular podcast. But I'm going to take a stab at it. And one particular aspect of it is the fact that climate change is here. And it's not going anywhere. And basically, because of that, now is the time to act. And if we do not, the consequences will be dire. And even if we do, we're going to still have to deal with a lot of the ramifications from it. So that's the thesis here. That's the introduction, if you will. And so I will get into the pieces that I have to back this theory up. And not so much a theory, I would say, probably more of an argument, we'll say. I will back this argument up here. So growing up in the U.S. here, I was often told that, obviously in a lot of documentaries that were produced in the mid to late 90s and were released in the 90s and, you know, were kept around in the school VHS bin and DVD bin for ages. I was told a lot that climate change was this thing that, it would affect us in the future. You know, it was coming, but it was something that, you know, we had time to fix, you know, but it wasn't an immediate concern and it wasn't really acute yet. It wasn't really affecting us. And this was the dominating narrative as it related to climate change ever since, I want to say, Silent Spring was written back in 1962. People have been ringing the alarm bells since the 60s that, you know, yeah, we need to fix this now or it's going to be an issue. But overall, the narrative was, well, you know, we'll get to it eventually. And so in my eyes, the eventually has already come and we're living through it now. And you don't really have to look any further than the states of Texas and Louisiana and as well as California. In the last few years, we've seen hurricane after hurricane after hurricane hit Southeast Texas and Louisiana, and you've seen the city of Houston and New Orleans being just hammered year after year after year from these just devastating storms. And in addition to that, you have the state of California that is, in my eyes, seems to constantly be on fire. There was a wildfire even going on at the time of recording this. And it's August, so, you know, it's the summer, fair enough. But in 2018, I was actually out there in Northern California, in the Bay Area. And whilst I was walking around San Francisco, the smoke from the fires was so, like, thick. It gave the whole city a kind of an orangish feel as the sun was coming through it. It was very, very apocalyptic looking. But my point is that these big disastrous weather events are happening right now, and it's not just in the U.S. You have things like the floods in out in the People's Republic of China, out in Henan Province, and then you have just the other week on August 11th, you had Sicily cracking 48 degrees Celsius, as it is a record temperature out in Sicily. And that's 119, I want to say, Fahrenheit. Not sure, though. So my point is that the events that I learned about growing up in school about climate change are here. They're undeniable. California was not on fire every year for several months at a time like it is now. You know, Sicily has not hit 119 degrees Fahrenheit or 48 degrees Celsius before. That's why it's a record. You know, to deny the reality of these climate change events is to stick your head in the sand and act like nothing's wrong. Climate change is here, and we have to take it on now. It's very simple. I also used to live in Arizona, and the average temperatures out there have gradually gone up further and further and further over the last several decades, especially as more people have moved to the area, moved to the state, rather. And the Phoenix, Tucson metro area they have going on over there. And so I'm going to look to the past as we've Actually, I'm going to look at what's going on now, and then I'm going to look at the past. And so as it stands now, you have the Paris Climate Accords. Those were established in 2015, I want to say. And basically, the overall mission, among other things, but the overall mission as it relates to climate, to global warming, would be to keep the temperature increase globally at below 2 degrees Celsius. So that's 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And so the aim is to keep the temperature from rising up to that 2 degree Celsius threshold. And this is all well and good. You know, this is a good, you know, it's a good plan to at least have some sort of limit in mind. But even if we get under that 2 degrees Celsius unit there, or limit there, we'll still have to deal with some of the effects of climate change. It's just really going to prevent a lot of the severe effects of climate change, as we may see them in the future. And so, and the reason why this is the case is why we can't eliminate global warming entirely, and why we can't sidestep these effects entirely, is because of something called the Little Ice Age. And the Little Ice Age happened in, you know, which generally there's a little debate on the time frame, but generally it's accepted that it happened from the 16th to the 19th century, and in Europe in particular, we'll focus on here. And so, in Europe here, there were a number of causes adapted to it, but there was obviously not man-made climate change in the way we're seeing it today, but it was a little more less intense version that was going on then. I want to say it was between 1 and 2 degrees Celsius. I believe I saw that somewhere, a John Green video, I want to say. But it was between 1 and 2 degrees Celsius. It wasn't that drastic, but the results were not quite catastrophic, but there were a lot of fallout. There was a lot of fallout from that. You had a lot of crop failure, livestock dying, diseases went up, economic struggles came because of all of these things. Basically, there was the Little Ice Age was a rather cool period in Europe at the time. And diseases, for example, thrived in cold, long cold, dry seasons. And diseases thrived, but obviously crops do not do well in long, cold, dry seasons, and neither do the livestock that would manage on the farms. So you had a lot of this instability caused by, you have a lot of these instability things caused by the climate change. And as a result, there was a lot of political instability because, you know, that food insecurity and that just basic security in your day-to-day affairs led to political instability on the scale of the nation. And so this natural changing of the Earth's climate did disrupt a lot of European societies at the time. And so the thing to bear in mind here is that was just natural. What we're going through right now is accelerated climate change, man-made climate change. That is certainly going to be more intense if it is not addressed. And so, as I've said before, we're already experiencing some of these ramifications from it in the natural disasters here in the U.S. and around the world. But in addition to that, there's an article here written by Giulia Sofiantini, I believe I got the name right, talking about food insecurity and that led to the Arab Spring. It was one of the factors that led to the Arab Spring. And so there was a causal relationship, she says, between food insecurity generated by extreme weather events, that would be the climate change, and then political instability. And so if we look at all of these really dire consequences, food insecurity, political insecurity, or political instability, wars, famines, disease, natural disasters that will kill, you know, they've killed people, clearly. We've seen the hurricanes out in Louisiana do that on an annual basis. These are dire consequences. And if they do not get addressed, they will only get worse. But thankfully, it looks like we're starting to see not only pushes in the public sector and international agreements, but we're also seeing movement in the private sector, especially I believe there's been a lot of recent pressure on oil and gas firms to create more sustainable ways to move forward in energy production. And so, and that's encouraging to see. And in addition to that, you have, surprisingly, Boris Johnson actually has been a quite a big advocate for using wind power out in the UK, which I suppose anyone who's ever been to the UK would know that that the wind out there is pretty serious. So you could definitely harness that. The use of solar power, you know, making that technology easier to use, and using a life cycle holistic approach to and a systematic way to cut down on our emissions at the corporate scale. You know, that's where a lot of this stuff needs to come in. At the large organizational scale, where everything is made with sustainability in mind, from start to finish, cradle to grave thinking. These are all things that are starting to happen now, because I believe people are starting to realize that we don't really have much time to waste at this point.